This is an election news special from NPR. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Senator Hillary Clinton won the election she needed to keep her hopes for the Democratic presidential nomination alive. While her margin of victory in Pennsylvania is not yet clear, she's been projected as the winner by NPR News. Senator Clinton's headquarters tonight is at the Park Hyatt Hotel in Philadelphia. As you can hear, there are speeches underway there. The candidate herself is expected to address her supporters in just a few moments. With me here in the studio in Washington, D.C. is NPR political editor Ken Rudin. Good evening, Ken.
Hi, Neil.
And the margin of victory is going to be very important.
Absolutely, and that was from the beginning. There was never a question that Hillary Clinton would win Pennsylvania. From day one, she was ahead in the polls. If she had lost, if Barack Obama had won and pulled off the upset, they would have been writing the obituaries for the Hillary Clinton campaign. If she had won by, like, say, 15 points, she could have made the argument to the superdelegates saying that Barack Obama cannot win in the big states. You should take a second look at me. But if the margin stays the way it is now, 7, 8, 9 points, it's basically a push. It's a push until May 6th in Indiana and North Carolina.
And as we're looking ahead to the rest of the race, there are some states that Senator Obama is clearly expected to win, North Carolina among them. Indiana, though, that could be very interesting.
Right, but that could, we always talk about a doomsday state, a do-or-die state. We've said it for Hillary Clinton many times. Obviously, had she lost Ohio, she could have been gone. Had she lost New Hampshire back in God knows when, she could have been gone. Indiana is a key one to watch on May 6th. 72 delegates at stake. Right now, it's a pretty much an even state. Barack Obama may have a slight lead in the polls. If he wins both Indiana and North Carolina on May 6th, they could be renewed calls for her to leave the race. If she wins Indiana, then here we go again. The race continues.
Well, let's not forget about Pennsylvania quite yet. This is an important victory for Senator Clinton. As you mentioned, she was on the cusp of being knocked out of this election. Well, this was the third time, and it's clear that Senator Obama made a concerted effort, spent a lot of money in Pennsylvania to try to drive her out of the race once and for all.
That's correct. He spent it. I think he outspent her in the state 3-1 and didn't get much for his showing. But having said that, Pennsylvania, look at the demographics there. It's an older state than most states. Only Florida and West Virginia have a higher percentage of older voters. Hillary Clinton has always done better, well, with older voters. There are more women in Pennsylvania than most states. It is whiter than most states. 82% of Pennsylvania is white compared to 66% of the country. Hillary Clinton has done better with whiter voters. So if you look at those demographics, this should have been Hillary Clinton's to win, and it was.
Again, we're listening in the background to speeches underway at Clinton headquarters in Philadelphia. We're expecting the candidate herself to come out and address her supporters in just a few minutes. In a reversal of the normal procedure, the person who loses tonight, Senator Barack Obama, will be speaking second. He took a plane earlier this evening from Pennsylvania and went on to Indiana. Well, he'll be addressing his supporters a bit later in the evening. Of course, when that happens, we'll bring you his remarks as well. But nevertheless, in Pennsylvania, important elements of the demographic vote, Ken Rudin, as you look at this, Hillary Clinton did extremely well among Catholics, did extremely well people earning less than $50,000 a year, extremely well against what used to be called Reagan Democrats.
That's exactly right. And gun owners, I think 46% of the people in Pennsylvania own a gun. She did very well with that segment of the population. And whether, you know, whoever wins the nomination, these are key voters that Democrats will have to take back in November if they're going to beat John McCain, as you say, what they call the Reagan Democrats, the blue-collar, lunch-bucket Democrats who are very fiscally and actually socially conservative. Pennsylvania, very pro-life state, very strong views on abortion. And again, if the Democrats, Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama, very pro-choice candidates, and until Pennsylvania, very strong about their arguments for gun control, you didn't hear that too much in the Keystone State, but obviously these are segments of the population Democrats would sorely need to win if they're going to beat John McCain in November. What's interesting is that if you look at the issues, President Bush, gasoline taxes, the war in Iraq, you think it's a perfect situation for the Democrats to win in November. But if you look at the polls, one-on-one, John McCain versus Barack Obama, John McCain versus Hillary Clinton, it's almost dead even. And that's not good news for the Democrats.
Yet in this election, as in the other primaries which preceded it, you have seen an enormous energy. People pouring out to the polls, a record turnout today among Democrats in the state of Pennsylvania. many, many, many millions of more Democrats coming out to vote this primary season than Republicans.
And these Democratic elders will tell you that for all the battles, for all the personal back and forth between Obama and Clinton that's going on now, the party will be united in November. But there are polls that show that among Hillary Clinton supporters, if Clinton does not win the nomination, perhaps as much as 30% of them could vote for John McCain in November. Among the Barack Obama supporters, some polls show anywhere between 15 and 20% of those who would either stay home or not vote for Hillary Clinton in November.
Again, we're expecting Senator Clinton out in a few minutes. In the meantime, joining us now is Clay Richards, Assistant Director of the Quinnipiac. Well, we'll bring him in just a minute, and we'll continue talking with NPR political editor Ken Rudin. And Ken, as we look ahead to this, the campaign has become such a negative campaign between Clinton and Obama in these past few weeks. Are they knocking each other out to John McCain's benefit?
Well, you know, the longer we've seen in history, the longer a battle for the nomination goes on, the worse it is for the prospects for that party to succeed in November. We saw that in 1980 when Ted Kennedy took his challenge to President Jimmy Carter straight to the Madison Square Garden convention. They were very uncomfortable with each other on the stage. The Democrats lost that year. 1976, Ronald Reagan and Gerald Ford, that battle went on through the convention. They did not really unite that strongly together at the convention, and the Republicans lost by a whisker in 1976. So obviously, the longer it goes on, the more damage this could go to the ultimate nominee. But as you say, there's tremendous energy on the part of the Democrats. They are registering. More Democrats are turning out and voting than ever before, and with so-called issues on their side, gasoline prices, Iraq, prescription drugs, things like that, Democrats said, look, as long as this ends early enough, and that could mean June 3rd for all we know when the primaries are over, that would be fine for the November, getting together, getting back their mojo back for November.
And the Democrats have another point. Right now, it's Clinton and Obama facing off against each other. As you mentioned, more and more as we've been going more and more negative, both sides, and as both sides have made missteps in the past couple of weeks, the misremembering the incident in Bosnia for Senator Clinton and for Senator Obama, the bitter and cling remarks, which may have alienated some of his the small-town people, small-town voters he was describing to fundraisers in San Francisco. Nevertheless, once you begin contrasting the eventual Democratic nominee against Senator McCain, things may look very different.
True, but at the same time, John McCain has a knack for appealing to independent voters. He's shown that in his primary victories and his fight for the nomination, both in 2000 and this year as well. He has appealed to independents. But again, if the war remains the key issue in November, then obviously that could be bad news for McCain and the Republicans.
Well, to the strains of won't back down, Senator Hillary Rodham Clinton of New York has entered the chamber. She's being helped up to the stage by Mayor Nutter of Philadelphia, one of her early supporters in the state of Pennsylvania. They are, of course, triumphant tonight. Former President Bill Clinton, of course, is on the scene as well, and he's now up on the stage joining his wife and who he hopes will be the Democratic presidential nominee. And they're, I think, Ken, rocking out.
Right. They have a right to rock out because, obviously, there's a lot of bad blood between the two parties. Obviously, Hillary Clinton was on the defensive over many things, as you say, the misremembering things in the Bosnia tarmac. This is a win. Look, 5 points, 10 points, 1 point is still a victory for Hillary Clinton. It enables her, at the least, to go on for two more weeks.
And the third time, she faced elimination and came through, as you mentioned, in New Hampshire the first time, then Texas and Ohio, and now here in Pennsylvania. Senator Clinton has come up to the lectern and is preparing to address her supporters here at the Park Hyatt Hotel in Philadelphia, and you can hear a raucous reception.
Pennsylvania Avenue, and it runs right through the heart of Pennsylvania. You know, For 6 weeks, Senator Obama and I have crisscrossed this state, meeting people up close, being judged side by side, making our best case. You listened, and today you chose. With two wars abroad and an economic crisis here at home, you know the stakes are high and the challenges are great. But you also know the possibilities. Those possibilities are endless. If we roll up our sleeves and get to work with a president who is ready to lead on day one. Take charge as Commander-in-Chief and make this economy work for middle-class families. And I thank you. I thank you, Pennsylvania, for deciding I can be that president. For me, the victory we share tonight is deeply personal. It was here in Pennsylvania where my grandfather started work as a boy in the lace mills and ended up as a supervisor 5 decades later. It was here where my father attended college and played football for Penn State. And I am back here tonight because of their hard work and sacrifice. And I only wish they could have lived to see this moment. Because in this election, I carry with me not just their dreams, but the dreams of people like them and like you all across our country. People who embrace hard work and opportunity, who never waver in the face of adversity, who stand for what you believe and never stop believing in the promise of America. I'm in this race to fight for you, to fight for everyone who's ever been counted out, for everyone fighting to pay the grocery bills or the medical bills, the credit card and mortgage payments, and the outrageous price of gas at the pump today. You know, the pundits question whether Pennsylvanians would trust me with this charge, and tonight you showed you do. You know you can count on me to stand up strong for you every single day in the White House. This is a historic race, and I commend Senator Obama and his supporters tonight. We are, in many ways, all on this journey together to create an America that embraces every last one of us. The women in their 90s who tell me they were born before women could vote, and they're hopeful of seeing a woman in the White House. The mothers and fathers at my events who lift their little girls on their shoulders and whisper in their ears, "See, you can be anything you want." Tonight, more than ever, I need your help to continue this journey. This is your campaign, and this is your victory tonight. Your support has meant the difference between winning and losing. Now, we can only keep winning if we can keep competing with an opponent who outspends us so massively. So, I hope you'll go to HillaryClinton.com. and show your support tonight. Because the future of this campaign is in your hands. Some people counted me out and said to drop out, but the American people... Well, the American people don't quit, and they deserve a president who doesn't quit either. You know, tonight, all across Pennsylvania and America, teachers are grading papers, and doctors and nurses are caring for the sick. And you deserve a leader who listens to you. Waitresses are pouring coffee, and police officers are standing guard, and small businesses are working to meet that payroll. And you deserve a champion who stands with you. And of course, all across the world, our men and women in uniform, some on your second, third, or fourth tour of duty. You deserve a commander-in-chief who will finally bring you home. And who will rebuild our strained military, do whatever it takes to care for our veterans wounded in both body and spirit. Today, here in Pennsylvania, you made your voices heard. And because of you, the tide is turning. We were up against a formidable opponent who outspent us 3-1. He broke every spending record in this state, trying to knock us out of the race. Well, the people of Pennsylvania had other ideas today. You know, the presidency is the toughest job in the world, but the pressures of a campaign are nothing compared to the pressures of the White House. And today, Pennsylvanians looked through all the heat and saw the light of a brighter tomorrow. A tomorrow of shared prosperity and restored world leadership for peace, security, and cooperation. After 7 long years of President Bush, we've got our work cut out for us. And we don't have a minute to waste. So it's high time we stop talking about our problems and start solving them. And that is what my campaign is all about. Solutions. Solutions for good jobs you can raise a family on. Jobs that can't be shipped overseas, and on Earth Day, clean, renewable, green jobs that can put us on the right track to the future. Solutions for independence from foreign oil and exploding gas prices, quality, affordable health care, not just for many Americans or most Americans, but for every single American, no exceptions and no excuses. Affordable college and real improvements in public schools, not the failure that is No Child Left Behind. We're going to end the war on science and have a renewed commitment to science and research. We will tackle everything from autism to Alzheimer's, cancer to diabetes, and make a real difference. I look forward to discussing all of these issues with the people of Indiana and North Carolina and the states that I'll be visiting in the coming weeks. Not long ago, a woman handed me a photograph of her father as a young soldier. He was receiving the Medal of Honor from President Truman at the White House During World War II, he had risked his life on a daring mission to drive back the enemy and protect his fellow soldiers. In the corner of that photo, in shaking handwriting, this American hero had simply written, to Hillary Clinton, keep fighting for us. And that is what... That is what I'm going to do, because America is worth fighting for. You are worth fighting for. It was in this city that our founders declared America's independence and our permanent mission to form a more perfect union. Now, neither Senator Obama nor I, nor many of you, were fully included in that vision. But we've been blessed by men and women in each generation who saw America not as it is, but as it could and should be. The abolitionists and the suffragists, the progressives and the union members, the civil rights leaders, all those who marched, protested, and risked their lives because they looked into their children's eyes and saw the promise of a better future. Because of them, I grew up taking for granted that women could vote. Because of them, my daughter grew up taking for granted that children of all colors could attend school together. And because of them, and because of you, this next generation will grow up taking for granted that a woman or an African American can be the President of the United States of America. By the support and the hospitality of all of the people of Pennsylvania. And I want to especially thank Governor Rendell and Mayor Nutter, Lieutenant Governor Catherine Baker Knoll, and State Treasurer Robin Weissman, and State Party Chair T.J. Rooney. These are great leaders and dear friends, as are my friends from the Congress, Representatives Murtha, Sestak, Schwartz, and Konjorski. Their support means the world to me. And the support of 100 mayors across this Commonwealth and so many other state and local leaders who worked hard for this victory tonight. I want to thank my friends and our labor unions for standing with us every step of the way. And my outstanding staff, volunteers, and supporters here in Pennsylvania and across America. And I especially want to thank my family for their incredible love and support. Bill and Chelsea have crisscrossed Pennsylvania from one end to the other. My brothers, Hugh and Tony, who love Pennsylvania with all their hearts from our childhood summers in Lake Winola, and my mother, who is with us tonight. We still have a lot of work ahead of us, but if you're ready, I'm ready. I might stumble and I might get knocked down, but as long as you'll stand with me, I will always get right back up. Because for me, in the end, the question isn't whether we can keep America's promise, it's whether we will keep America's promise. So let me ask you. Let me ask you tonight. Will we once again be the can-do nation, the nation that defies the odds and does the impossible? Will we break the barriers and open the doors and lift up all of our people? Will we reach out to the world and lead by the power of our ideals again? Yeah! will we take back the White House and take back our country. I believe with all of my heart that together we will turn promises into action. Words will become solutions. Hope will become reality. So my answer to any who doubt is yes, we will. Thank you and God bless you.
Senator Hillary Rodham Clinton celebrating her victory in the Pennsylvania primary earlier today, and she spoke live to her supporters at the Park Hyatt Hotel in Philadelphia, the Clinton Election Night headquarters in Pennsylvania. You're listening to an NPR election news special. I'm Neil Conan in Washington, along with NPR political editor Ken Rudin, and joining us now from the Clinton headquarters is NPR's David Green. David?
Hi, Neil.
And what are you hearing from the Clinton people tonight? As about 70% of the vote in, she leads Senator Obama by about 8 points. Of course, a win was crucial, but they had hoped for maybe a couple of more points.
They had, and you know, it was interesting, Neil, because as soon as the early returns started coming in and this race was declared, the Clinton advisors came out and started declaring the victory and sort of explaining it and trying to move the story forward before reporters could even start asking the question, was this margin of victory enough? They say that in this race, they exposed some real weaknesses in Barack Obama and took some of the magic away. Barack Obama is going to come up and tell a very different story and say that this was just one state and that he's still in a very good position.
And indeed, he is. No matter what happens in Pennsylvania, he will emerge with the lead in the popular vote and the lead in delegates, a lead which Senator Clinton may not be able to overtake without the help of superdelegates. And that, David Green, that's where her argument is going to be.
That is where her argument is going to be, Neil. And they're going to make the case to superdelegates beginning right now, trying to ride the wave of momentum that they have coming out of Pennsylvania. And, you know, the other question is whether this race is going to turn negative. There was a real sense in the last week or so in Pennsylvania that, especially coming out of that debate, that these two candidates were really going at each other. Now, the Clinton campaign suggests that it was Barack Obama who really brought this race down into the mud in the last week or so. But voters have a different impression. What we've been seeing in exit polls is that the more voters believe that Hillary Clinton has gone negative than Barack Obama. And we'll see what the effect is on both of these candidates, if that's where the race is going.
Senator Obama, of course, left earlier today from Pennsylvania to go to Evansville, Indiana. He has yet to speak to his supporters. When he does, we will bring you those remarks live. And as David Green suggests, he will have a very different account of today's results. Nevertheless, David, at least in a victory speech, Senator Clinton was very gracious as she thanked Senator Obama and his supporters, said, "Barack and I are in this together."
She was very gracious, but she also sort of touched on a few of the tough themes that she brought up in the last week or so, talking about the pressures inside the White House. That was one thing that she said about Barack Obama in these final days, that if he's going to complain about tough questions during a debate, then he might not be able to handle the heat in the kitchen as president. But it was a very gracious speech, and Hillary Clinton also tried to intertwine her challenges in getting this nomination with some of the everyday challenges that Americans have, paying the gas bills, paying the mortgage. So really trying to reach out to some of these voters who stood behind her in Pennsylvania, less affluent working class voters.
David Green, thanks very much for being with us, and we'll be sure to be hearing from you later this evening.
Pleasure, Neil.
NPR's David Green with the Clinton campaign in Philadelphia. Ken Rudin, Senator Clinton in her speech tonight also said, they tried to count me out. Well, America needs a president who can stand up and fight. and then mentioned, I think, at least three times that she was outspent 3-1 and made an open appeal for contributions.
Right. I wasn't sure if this was a Jerry Lewis telethon or what, but clearly the point is that Barack Obama has $41 million stored away in the bank, ready to spend at his disposal, whereas Hillary Clinton is running in the red. Now, of course, if this victory can get more people to open up and start writing more checks, you know, through the next 2 weeks, obviously for Indiana, North Carolina, and the states beyond, that's one thing. But, you know, she said one thing also that was interesting. She said she's gotten knocked down, but she gets right up. But it's more than just getting, because time is running short. The key number here is not 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, but 2025, the number of delegates needed to win the nomination. And as you said before, no matter what amount of net gain she gets out of Pennsylvania tonight, it could be anywhere between 8 and 12 delegates for all we know, she still won't come close to Barack Obama in the total number of delegates. And then he could have the same kind of victory in 2 weeks with the, you know, with the 115 delegates at stake in North Carolina. And he could also win with 60% or 55% that could move out as well. Also, David Green made a very interesting point. He said that, that they have exposed the weaknesses Barack Obama, and that's true, but at the same time, her negatives, Hillary Clinton's negatives, are higher than ever, and a recent Washington Post poll shows that more people feel that she's it's more difficult for her to tell the truth. She has more of an inability and untrustworthiness regarding telling the truth, and that's going to hurt her throughout the rest of the campaign.
Nevertheless, she has scored an important victory this evening in Pennsylvania, a victory without which her campaign would have been written off and probably have ended. There are still some races left to beginning in 2 weeks in North Carolina and Indiana. Indiana will be the race most people will be looking at, though North Carolina is a bigger state. Indiana, a more competitive state. North Carolina pretty much conceded already to Senator Obama. Stay with us. We're going to be bringing you a pollster, and that's going to be Clay Richards of the Quinnipiac University Polling Institute to find out what happened in today's elections in Pennsylvania. And we're going to be taking your calls on what happened there and why, particularly if you are in Pennsylvania and you were at the polls, give us a call and tell us what it was like there today. Our phone number is 800-989-8255. You can also send us email. The address is talk@npr.org. Ken Rudin will also be with us. And when Senator Obama addresses his supporters in Indiana, well, we'll bring you his remarks live. I'm Neil Conan, and this is an NPR Election News Special. This is an NPR Election News Special. I'm Neil Conan in Washington, along with NPR political editor Ken Rudin. Senator Hillary Clinton won the Pennsylvania primary today with about 70% of the vote in already. She leads Senator Barack Obama by about 8 points. And joining us now is Clay Richards, Assistant Director of the Quinnipiac University Polling Institute, with us on the phone from his home. And good evening to you.
Hi, Neil. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you. And as you look at the rest of Pennsylvania to come in, do you expect that margin of 8 votes to change significantly?
Well, I would look. I don't know how much is in from the southeast suburbs of Philadelphia. That's the big swing area in Pennsylvania elections. And in our pre-election polls, Senator Obama was carrying it by about 4 points. If he picks up more than that there, then the margin could narrow down. If not, it should stay right where it is or maybe even go up a point or two.
And this margin of victory, well, it's crucial. A lot of people said without a double-digit win, what she did in Ohio or better, Senator Clinton, we really can't claim a decisive victory.
Well, you know, 8 points isn't too shabby. If you look at it, it's been a seven-week campaign. Senator Obama has spent $9 million. That his goal was to do better than the 10% loss he had in Ohio and New Jersey, which are the two bookends of Pennsylvania. And if all that money and all that time has only lowered it by 2 points, then he hasn't made any major inroads. And in fact, the numbers bear out that he basically has not taken any of her core vote away from her.
We're expecting Senator Obama to emerge to speak to his supporters in just a couple of minutes. Before we let you go, Clay Richards, can you give us two or three issues that you think may have made the difference today in Pennsylvania?
Well, I think there was just one, that the numbers showed that the voters may think that Senator Clinton is less trustworthy than Senator Obama, but they trust Hillary Clinton to handle the economy. 89% of the voters in Pennsylvania said the nation is in a recession. 74% said Senator Clinton can do the job to handle the economy. You know, I think that's the one issue that was on the minds of the voters in Pennsylvania and has been on the minds of voters in states like Pennsylvania, Texas, Ohio, New Jersey. That's what's making the difference. And that the other issues, be them Bosnia or the other issues that have been raised about Senator Clinton's credibility, just don't weigh as strongly.
Clay Richards, thanks very much for your time. We appreciate it.
Okay, take care, Neil.
Clay Richards, Assistant Director of the Quinnipiac University Polling Institute, joined us on the phone from his home. Joining us now from Senator Obama's campaign headquarters, well, I guess his campaign headquarters in Indiana, that's at Roberts Municipal Stadium in Evansville, is NPR's Don Gagne. And Don, are we expecting Senator Obama shortly?
We're expecting him any moment. You can hear the crowd. They're just coming to life. They know he's in the building. They just heard John Mellencamp sing about life in a small town, and they are waiting to hear from the candidate. But I can tell you, it's not a rip-roaring victory party. People would have liked it to have been closer than it seems to have been in Pennsylvania.
And any indication from the Obama campaign how they're explaining this? Are they calling this a victory?
They're not calling it a victory. They're saying it is one state. There are nine more races to go. David Axelrod, who is Obama's chief political strategist, on the plane flying here this evening from Philadelphia, said, the Clinton campaign says this may indicate that there are problems with Barack Obama as a candidate. He says, well, ask her if she wouldn't trade places with us. She would trade places with us in a minute right now. So that's their response. You can hear the crowd building. Barack Obama is probably in the tunnel, if not actually in the arena. My view of the stage is blocked momentarily right here.
And can you just describe Roberts Municipal Stadium for us?
It's like one of those medium-sized, maybe 10 or 12,000 seat hockey, basketball arenas that you see in, small and medium-sized towns around the country.
Evansville, Indiana, in the southern part of the state. An interesting choice for Senator Obama to make his campaign speech tonight. And is there any significance in the fact that Senator Obama is speaking a second after the winner in Pennsylvania?
I think it's a question of the Clinton campaign, Hillary Clinton, not wanting to wait for her. He was in transit. He was in Philadelphia doing interviews right up until almost when polls closed this evening, and flew here, the hour and a half or thereabouts from Philadelphia. And frankly, the Clinton administration kind of cast aside the usual election night etiquette and decided, well, she wants to get out there. He's in transit. She spoke.
Senator Obama is on the stage now at the Roberts Municipal Stadium there in Evansville, Indiana, along with his wife. He's greeting supporters and preparing to address the crowd there, applauding, giving the raised fist salute as he approaches the lectern.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody. Thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you, Evansville. Thank you. Thank you, Evansville. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, everybody. Listen, there are a couple of thank yous I've got to say. First of all, it's good. It's good to be back in the Midwest. I am glad to see everybody here in Evansville. I want to thank. I love you back. I want to thank John Mellencamp and his wonderful wife, Elaine, for taking the time to be here today, driving up from Bloomington. Give them a big round of applause. And I want to thank your wonderful mayor, Jonathan Weinzapple, and his lovely wife, Patricia, who have been just so gracious to both Michelle and myself. I have repeatedly said upon first meeting the mayor that this guy's going somewhere. And mainly because, like me, he married up. And his wife is such an asset. But I'm so grateful for his support. It means so much, and Evansville obviously is going to be so important to this upcoming election. You know, I want to thank all of you who are here tonight, but I want to start tonight by congratulating Senator Clinton on her victory this evening, and she ran a terrific race. And I want to thank the hundreds of thousands of Pennsylvanians who stood with our campaign today. You know, there were a lot of folks who didn't think we could make this a race when it started. They thought we were going to be blown out. But we worked hard. And we traveled across the state to big cities and small towns, to factories and VFW halls. And now, 6 weeks later, we closed the gap. We rallied people of every age and race and background to the cause. And whether they were inspired for the first time or for the first time in a long time, we registered a record number of voters. And it is those new voters who will lead our party to victory in November. These Americans cast their ballots for the same reason you came here tonight. For the same reason that millions of Americans have gone door to door and given whatever small amounts they can to this campaign, for the same reason that we began this journey, just a few hundred miles from this spot on a cold February morning in Springfield, because we believe that the challenges we face are bigger than the smallness of our politics, and we know that this election is our chance to change it. After 14 long months, it's easy to forget what this campaign's about from time to time, to lose sight of the fierce urgency of this moment. It's easy to get caught up in the distractions and the silliness and the tit-for-tat that consumes our politics, the bickering that none of us are entirely immune to, and that trivializes the profound issues: two wars, an economy in recession, a planet in peril, issues that confront our nation. But that kind of politics is not why we are here tonight. It's not why I'm here, and it's not why you're here. We are here because of the more than 100 workers in Logansport, Indiana, who just found out that their company has decided to move its entire factory to Taiwan. We're here because of the young man I met in Youngsville, North Carolina, who almost lost his home because he has 3 children with cystic fibrosis and couldn't pay their medical bills, who still doesn't have health insurance for himself or his wife, and lives in fear that a single illness could cost them everything. We're here because there are families all across this country who are sitting around the kitchen table right now trying to figure out how they're going to pay their insurance premiums and their kids' tuition and still make the mortgage so that they're not the next ones in the neighborhood to put a for sale sign in their front yard. people who will lay awake tonight wondering if next week's paycheck will cover next month's bills. We're not here to talk about change for change's sake, but because our families and our communities and our country desperately need it. We are here because we can't afford to keep doing what we've been doing for another 4 years. We can't afford to play the same Washington games with the same Washington players and expect a different result. Not this time. Not now. We already know what we're getting out of the other party's nominee. John McCain has offered this country a lifetime of service, and we respect that. But what he's not offering is any meaningful change from the policies of George W. Bush. John McCain believes that George Bush's Iraq policy is a success, so he's offering 4 more years of a war with no exit strategy. A war that's sending our troops on their 3rd tour and their 4th tour and their 5th tour of duty. A war that's cost us billions of dollars and thousands of lives, thousands more grievously injured. A war that has not made us more safe, but has distracted us from the task at hand in Afghanistan. A war that should have never been authorized and should have never been waged. John McCain said that George Bush's economic policies have led to, and I quote, great progress over the last 7 years. And so he's promising 4 more years of tax cuts for CEOs and corporations who didn't need them and weren't asking for them. Tax cuts that he once voted against because he said they offended his conscience. Well, they may have stopped offending John McCain's conscience somewhere along the road to the White House, but George Bush's economic policies still offend my conscience, and they still offend yours. Because I don't think that the 232,000 Americans who've lost their jobs this year are seeing great progress the way John McCain has seen it. I don't think the millions of Americans losing their homes have seen that progress. I don't think the families without health care and the workers without their pensions have seen that progress. And if we continue down the same reckless path, I don't think that future generations who will be saddled with debt will see these years of progress. We already know John McCain offers more of the same, so the question is not whether the other party will bring about change to Washington. We know they won't. The question is, will we? That's the question we face in this election. Because the truth is, the challenges we face are not just the fault of one man or one party. I mean, think about it. How many decades have we been talking about solving our health care crisis? How many presidents have promised to end our dependence on foreign oil? How many jobs have gone overseas in the 70s and the 80s and the 90s? And we still haven't done anything about it, and we know why. In every election, politicians come to your cities and your towns, and they tell you what you want to hear. And they make big promises, and they lay out all these plans and policies. But then they go back to Washington when the campaign's over. Lobbyists spend millions of dollars to get their way. The status quo sets in, and instead of fighting for health care or jobs, Washington ends up fighting over the latest distraction of the week. It happens year after year after year after year. And this is our chance to say, not this year. This is our chance to say, not this time. We have a choice in this election. We can be a party that says there's no problem with taking money from Washington lobbyists, from oil lobbyists and drug lobbyists and insurance lobbyists. We can pretend they represent real Americans and look the other way when they use their money and influence to stop us from reforming health care or investing in renewable energy for yet another 4 years. Or this time, we can recognize that you can't be the champion of working Americans if you're funded by lobbyists who drown out their voices. We can do what we've done in this campaign and say we won't take a dime of their money. We can do what I did in Illinois and in Washington and bring both parties together to rein in their power so we can take our government back. That's the choice we have in this election. We can be a party that thinks the only way to look tough on national security is to talk and act and vote like George Bush and John McCain. We can use fear as a tactic, the threat of terrorism to scare up votes, or we can decide that real strength is asking the tough questions before we send our troops in to fight. We can see the threats we face for what they are. A call to rally all Americans and all the world against the common challenges of the 21st century. Terrorism and nuclear weapons, climate change and poverty, genocide and disease. That's what it takes to keep us safe in this world. That's the real legacy of Roosevelt and Kennedy and Truman. That's why I'm running for President of the United States of America, to restore that legacy. Party that says and does whatever it takes to win the next election. We can calculate and poll test our positions, tell everyone exactly what they want to hear, or we can be the party that doesn't just focus on how to win, but why we should. We can tell everyone what they need to hear about the challenges we face. We can seek to regain not just an office, but the trust of the American people, that their leaders in Washington will tell them the truth. That's the choice in this election. We can be a party of those who only think like we do and only agree with all our positions. We can continue to slice and dice this country into red states and blue states. We can exploit the divisions that exist in our country for pure political gain. Or this time, we can build on the movement we started in this campaign, a movement that's united Democrats, independents, Republicans, young, old, rich, poor, white, black, Hispanic, Asian, Native American, gay, straight, because one thing I know from traveling 46 states this campaign season is that we are not as divided as our politics suggest. We may have different stories, we may have different backgrounds, but we hold common hopes for the future of this country that we love. In the end, this election is still our best chance to solve the problems we've been talking about for decades. As one nation, as one people, 14 months later, that is still what this election is about. Millions of Americans who believe we can do better, that we must do better. That is what's put us in the position to bring about real change. And now it's up to you, Evansville. Now it's up to you, Indiana. You can decide. You can decide whether we're going to travel the same worn path or whether we will chart a new course that offers real hope for the future. During the course of this campaign, we've all learned what my wife reminds me all the time, that I'm not a perfect man. I will not be a perfect president. And so, while I will always listen to you and be honest with you and fight for you every single day for the next 4 or 8 years, I will also... I will also, should I have the opportunity to serve as your president, ask you to be a part of the change that we need. Because in my 2 decades of public service in this country, I have seen time and time again that real change doesn't begin in the halls of Washington, but on the streets of America. It doesn't happen from the top down, but it happens from the bottom up. I also know the real change has never been easy, and it won't be easy this time either. The status quo in Washington will fight. They will fight harder than ever to divide us and distract us with ads and attacks from now until November. But don't ever forget that you have the power to change this country. You can make this election about how we're going to help. You can make this election about how we're going to help those workers in Logansport, how we're going to retrain them and educate them and make our workforce competitive in a global economy. You can make this election about how we're going to make health care affordable for that family in North Carolina, how we're going to help those families sitting around the kitchen table tonight pay their bills and stay in their homes. You can make this election about how we plan to leave our children, all our children, a planet that's safer and a world that still sees America the same way my father saw it from across the ocean, as a beacon of all that is good and all that is possible for all of mankind. Now is our turn to follow in the footsteps of all those generations who sacrificed and struggled and faced down the greatest odds to perfect our improbable union. And if we're willing to do what they did, if we're willing to shed our cynicism and our doubts and our fears, if we're willing to believe in what's possible again, then I believe we won't just win this primary election. We won't just win here in Indiana. We won't just win this election in November. We will change this country. We will change the world. We will keep this country's promise alive in the 21st century. That's our task. That's our job. Let's get to work. Thank you. May God bless you. And God bless the United States of America.
Senator Barack Obama addressing his supporters tonight at Roberts Municipal Stadium in Evansville, Indiana, conceding defeat to Senator Hillary Rodham Clinton, who defeated him decisively earlier today in the Democratic primary in Pennsylvania. You're listening to an NPR election news special from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington, along with NPR political editor Ken Rudin. Senator Hillary Clinton said today the tide is turning in her favor. She scored a must-win victory in Pennsylvania today. All eyes, of course, on the margin of that victory. And right now, with about 85% of the vote counted, she leads Senator Barack Obama by 10 points, about 190,000 votes. Senator Obama's supporters may be disappointed by that margin. Senator Clinton hoped to equal or better the margin that she defeated him by in Ohio. Well, that was 10 points. It's going to be a very interesting contest, Ken Rudin.
That's true, and perhaps Barack Obama could turn the tides in 2 weeks when the scene shifts to Indiana and North Carolina. I can't believe that we're talking about May 6th being crucial. I mean, months ago we thought it'd be over either by New Hampshire, by Super Tuesday, the latest, and yet all these states that have been so ignored for so long, as a matter of fact, Indiana has not had an interesting presidential primary since Bobby Kennedy won it in 1968. That's how long it's been since Indiana played a role in here. But here it is, approaching May, and those two states are big ones.
And as we've said earlier, North Carolina coming up also in 2 weeks. Well, that's considered an Obama state. Anything other than a thumping victory by Barack Obama would be considered a defeat. Indiana is highly competitive.
Right. And of course, here we go again by saying what matters and what constitutes a decisive victory. But again, here we go again. If Barack Obama does win both states on May 6th, then the argument is that it's hard to see him being stopped. If Hillary Clinton could win the key state, the toss-up state right now of Indiana, then there's no reason why, as she said, she has to be pushed out of the race. It's only the seventh inning. We still have, after today, we still have nine more contests to go until June 3rd.
Well, a little bit later, if you missed either of the candidate speeches, we'll bring you excerpts of what they had to say to their supporters tonight. We'll also be talking with analysts who look at the race, and we'll be talking with you. We'd hope if you were in Pennsylvania, call and tell us what the polls were like there. Our number is 800-989-8255. Also call us if you'd like to know more about what happened today and why. Again, the phone number is 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. Joining us now, however, is Peter Brown. He's the with the Quinnipiac University Polling Institute and joins us from his home. And Peter, good of you to be with us this evening.
Good evening.
And what do you think made the difference for Hillary Clinton in Pennsylvania?
What made the difference for Hillary Clinton in Pennsylvania is the same thing that made the difference for Hillary Clinton in Ohio, which is that Senator Obama has been unable to win white working-class Democrats, especially in rural and smaller communities. He, you know, Senator Obama didn't do that much better in Philadelphia than he had hoped. In fact, didn't quite make some of the marks. But it was out in the Eries and the Scrantons that he just didn't do very well. And this repeats the same pattern as Ohio. And, you know, frankly, Indiana shares much in common in terms of its demographics with Pennsylvania and Ohio.
And that will be interesting to look at. Do you think that his remarks, widely reported remarks to fundraisers in San Francisco about bitter middle-class voters in small towns who cling to religion and guns, do you think that hurt him?
Well, it certainly didn't help him. And once again, Senator Clinton, as has been the case in almost all the primaries, got a majority of those who said they made up their minds close to the voting, not before that. Now, certainly you can attribute it to the bitter remarks. You can, you know, attribute it to the questions about his association with the Ayers. You can
the weatherman, Bill Ayers, yeah.
Right, or perhaps even this is, again, the first primary since the controversy about Reverend Wright. But for whatever the reason, he's having the same problem with the same group of voters. They may live in Scranton and Erie instead of Lehman and suburban Columbus, but they're still there.
Nevertheless, looking at the exit polls, Senator Clinton is not exactly trusted by many of the voters.
That's exactly right. And again, that's not hugely different than what we've seen. What we're seeing is that this is a very close race on the Democratic side. Each candidate has very strong constituent groups, and they stay with them. In our pre-primary polls, Senator Clinton's support stayed stable over the whole six-week period since right after the Ohio primary, basically 50 or 51%. Now, when you take out the undecided, that's why how you get to 55-45 tonight. And it basically stayed there. Senator Obama picked up undecideds who, you know, when Senator Clinton had a 20-point lead in Pennsylvania, it wasn't that her numbers were that high. It was only in the low 50s. But that Senator Obama was in the, you know, in the 30s, but there were a lot of undecideds. Most of the undecideds went to Senator Obama, but it wasn't enough because her base was so solid.
Are we seeing similar patterns as we've seen before, that older, less well-off, whiter Democrats support Hillary Clinton?
I think that's absolutely right. What you're seeing is that the same people, demographically, from state to state, are going for the same candidates. Pennsylvania is kind of interesting. It has one of the largest Roman Catholic populations, and the exit polls showed that roughly Roman Catholics made up almost a third of the vote in the primary, and then they went very heavily for Senator Clinton.
Those who registered late, those, however, seemed to break for Senator Obama.
That's correct, according to the exit polls. But that's not surprising. I mean, here's what we've got here. Senator Obama's appeal is the notion of enlarging the Democratic electorate, of bringing in voters who had not previously participated, some African-Americans who not participated, younger voters. Those are the two main groups. Senator Clinton's support is among those who have been traditional Democratic voters, white working-class voters. They're the people that were part of the New Deal coalition, and they're still part of it, even though it's not as successful as it once was.
And earlier in other states where they made more of a factor, she won among Hispanics, too.
That's correct. She did much better than Senator Obama among Hispanics, but they're not a big factor in Pennsylvania.
As you look ahead, is the conventional wisdom, do you think, correct that Senator Obama should win easily in North Carolina and Senator Clinton should give him a hard contest in Indiana?
Demographics may not be destiny, but they go a long way towards it. And I think that's right. The demographics of the Democratic Party in North Carolina are more favorable to him, less favorable in Indiana. Indiana is more like Ohio and Pennsylvania. One of Senator Obama's strengths in terms of winning the nomination has been his ability to win what we call red states, states that President Bush carried. And these are states where the Democratic electorate isn't that large, and it's much more uniform. It is either African-American, whites who are members of labor unions, college graduates, et cetera. Now, that's a smaller group compared to the overall population of the state, but it's a little bit more homogeneous, and it happens to be more homogeneous in the way among groups that are favorable to Senator Obama.
Peter, this may be a question more I should ask more of a pundit than a pollster, but here's what I'm faced with. I'm listening to you talk about all the faults that Barack Obama has in his failures to win blue-collar, working-class Democratic voters, even though prior to Pennsylvania he had more 700,000 more votes, certainly more delegates than Hillary Clinton. But if that's the case and he limps to the nomination, he almost limps into the general election with serious drawbacks.
Oh, I don't think there's any doubt about it. What Ohio and Pennsylvania have shown is that he has a serious problem with white working-class Democrats. If he has a serious problem with white working-class Democrats, how do you think he's going to do with white working-class independents and white working-class soft Republicans? I mean, a quarter of voters who said in this primary told the exit pollsters that they would vote for John McCain against Obama. Now, part of it is in the heat of the moment, and obviously this has been a very hard-fought campaign, and the tensions are high on both sides, so you know, no one expects that number would be accurate come November. But it does portend, perhaps, the potential for McCain to pick up people who, you know, maybe have voted for Ronald Reagan, but certainly had lost their patience with George W. Bush.
Peter Brown, thanks very much for being with us this evening.
My pleasure.
Appreciate your time. Peter Brown with the Quinnipiac University Polling Institute with us from his home. And we're going to be taking calls from you this evening. If you're in Pennsylvania, call and tell us what the polls were like today. Also call us if you'd like to know more about what happened and why. At the moment, Senator Clinton continues to lead Senator Obama by 10 points with about almost 90% of the vote counted. And let's go to the phones. This is Liz. Liz calling us from Brooklyn, New York.
Hi. I just want to let you know that I traveled to Philadelphia today to campaign for Hillary, and we were on a street intersection in Northeast Philly, Cotman Avenue and Frankfurt, and the atmosphere was electrifying there. It was just so electric. Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Oh, okay. The constant honking from every facet of the population. We could see the faces of the people in the cars, men, women, young people, everybody was showing their support. And it was just thrilling to be there and help, you know, the way we were with our signs and just reminding people to get out the vote.
And evidently, a record number of them did just that.
Oh, I think every one of them passed by that corner.
Liz,
we had, some Obama people pass by. and we had a quick response to their yell for Obama, and we would yell back, "No, Chelsea's mama." So we were kind of having fun with it. You know, it felt good. I was thrilled to be able to go from New York and help. There's a very strong contingent of New Yorkers that are just, you know, just solid Hillary supporters and are getting out there and helping in every way we can.
Liz, thanks very much for the call. We appreciate your patience.
Hey, thank you.
So long. Let's go now to Neil, and Neil's with us from Philadelphia.
Hi, I'm calling. I actually live in Lancaster, and I'm calling to say my wife and I got up early this morning to be at the polls at 7 o'clock. We actually got there at 7:02 with our 8-year-old son to vote, and there was almost nobody there. I mean, we thought we were prepared for me to maybe miss the 8:30 train to Philadelphia because of the crowds, and there were like 10 people, and we were out of there in 5 minutes.
So a very quiet reception there at the polls early this morning. Evidently, that changed later.
It must have, yeah. But we were done and out of there in 3 minutes. And our son was really excited. He's adopted an African American, and he, you know, we had a call yesterday. He said Barack Obama called us and asked us to vote. So he was very excited that Barack made the call himself. You know, he could hear it over the answering machine.
Neil, thanks very much for the call.
Sure.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
800-989-8255. If you'd like to join us, here's an email we got from Ethel in New York. She painted Pennsylvania blue today. She's won every large state except Michigan, which is the only way to beat the Republicans in November. Well, she won Michigan, too, but she was one of the very few candidates on the ballot in Michigan. He has won the little states that we Democrats rarely get. Ethel continues, doesn't mean a whole lot. The superdelegates understand what's important. Well, that remains to be seen as well. Senator Barack Obama leads in the delegate count, though Hillary Clinton may emerge with a 200,000 vote plurality in Pennsylvania today, maybe more. She's not going to catch him in this week on the popular count either. In any case, we're going to continue taking your calls and talking about the results today in Pennsylvania, along with NPR political editor Ken Rudin. If you'd like to join us, 800-989-8255. You can also send us email. That address is talk@npr.org. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan, and this is an election news special from NPR News. This is an NPR News special. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Senator Hillary Clinton took home a critical victory tonight after a bruising and bitter battle in Pennsylvania. She continues to lead Senator Barack Obama by about 10 points with 88% of the votes counted, but there is no time for celebration, or that, for that matter, much mourning in either camp. There are primary battles coming up in Indiana and North Carolina just 2 weeks away. With us is Ken Rudin, NPR's political editor here in Studio 3A, and we are going to hear from you as well. If you are in Pennsylvania today, call and tell us what the polls were like, or if you'd like to know more about what happened today and why, 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. We'll also be talking with NPR with political strategists from the Democratic and Republican parties looking ahead to what this victory means for Senator Clinton and for the Democratic race and for November. In the meantime, let's go to another caller, and this is Sky. Sky calling us from Massachusetts.
Hi there.
Hi, go ahead, please.
I'm from California, and I decided to buy a ticket to visit my grandma and then drive from Boston to Allentown, Pennsylvania today.
Allentown, Pennsylvania, one of those working-class towns where Hillary Clinton did very well.
Did she? Yeah, I haven't seen the results. And I want to report that I went to a very poor district in Allentown and was on the street for about 7 hours knocking on doors and encouraging people to vote. And the large majority of people that I talked to were really excited about Obama. And so I just wanted to share that, you know, that was the vibe I got from people. It was largely African-American and Latina community. And I definitely wanted to send my thanks and congratulations to the volunteer that spoke earlier for Clinton, you know, and send positive messages her way as well.
And will you be moving on to work for Senator Obama in other states?
You know, I make phone calls from home in California, and I have been ever since, you know, throughout the whole process, because I think he's the candidate for me.
And let me ask you, are you one of those Obama supporters who would find it difficult to support Senator Clinton if she should pull the upset and win the nomination?
No, and I think Obama is a very wise and gentlemanly candidate, and I think his supporters would also follow him in supporting Clinton. But I did want to ask a question of you and your listeners. I've been really wondering, why is Obama's money, large money chest, a negative against him when the majority of it has been raised by citizens and represents the support of the people?
I think only the Clinton campaign considers it a negative.
Yeah, that's true, and she does mention it a lot. It seems to me if she had the same popular support as he does, she would have a similar financial war chest.
As we heard earlier from Don Gagne, asked about the victory in Pennsylvania today, Obama supporters on the plane, his campaign staffers were saying, would she be willing to switch places with us in a heartbeat? Of course she would.
Right.
Thanks
right.
very much for the call, Sky.
It has been kind of fun to listen to Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton talk about how they're being outspent and outspent. And that, of course, in 1996, when Bill Clinton was running for re-election, he vastly outspent Bob Dole. And you didn't hear any sympathy coming from the Democrats about Bob Dole's financial inequities there.
Let's go now to Ellie Ann. And Ellie Ann is with us from Portland, Oregon.
Hi.
Good evening.
Hi. I'm here. I'm excited about how things are going and the fact that we have a primary on May 20th, and I hope this election still goes on so I get a chance to vote.
It's beginning to look that way.
Yep. So when people are kind of saying, oh, it's dragging out too long, and, maybe they'll call it if it goes one way in Indiana, it's like, no, I want it to keep going. I want my vote to count and not have the rest of the country decide who our candidate's going to be.
Interesting. We got this email from Marcia in Iowa City, and she writes, I'm a native Iowan. With all the controversy over the Iowa caucuses, I'd just like to say the Pennsylvania race points out just how important every state is in the nomination process. This has been a tremendous race between Senators Clinton and Obama, and I hope the turnouts show just how important every state and every vote is in our democratic process. And Eliane, is there a lot of political excitement there in Oregon?
No, it is. It's very exciting. I live a few blocks from where the Obama headquarters is for Oregon, and we have some of the very excited, I know, Obama supporters, and actually I'm pretty excited to be able to vote for Hillary. I had seen her speak when Bill was in office and was really impressed with her, and so like I want to get my chance to vote for her.
Eliane, thanks very much, and it looks like Oregon is going to play an important part in the nominating process.
Yep.
Good night.
Thanks.
You know, it's funny, when they moved all the states up, when all the states desperately tried to move into early to January and February on the calendar because they were so afraid that the race would be over by the time they got to these states. Remember in 2000, Al Gore won Iowa, New Hampshire. The race was over. In 2004, John Kerry won Iowa, New Hampshire, won it by the state of Wisconsin. Now, as we say, we're talking about Oregon, May 20th, and it's still going on. And so all the predictors of a one-round knockout have long since proved that they were wrong.
And, of course, two of those states that moved up, Michigan and Florida, moved up so they could have a role in the nominating process. And, of course, by Democratic Party rules, their votes, at least at this point, aren't going to count. And if they'd stayed where they originally were, they would have been huge factors in the race.
They certainly spited themselves, exactly.
Let's get another caller on the line. And this is Matt. Matt calling us from Pennsylvania.
Yes, hi.
Good evening.
Hi. Yeah, I just wanted to comment on the I live in Philadelphia, Northwest Philadelphia, and although there wasn't really any lines or anything at my polling station, I was quite happy to find out from the poll workers that actually they had the biggest turnout there today, I think, that they could ever recall, something like 50-plus percent of the total registered Democrats in that, well, Democrats and Republicans in that, in my area, had voted when I came in at about 7 o'clock. So compared to what they normally get, I think that was quite astounding for them.
And Ken Rudin, these turnouts, not just in Pennsylvania, have been phenomenal this election.
And it started in Iowa. It started once upon a time when there was a Republican race as well in Iowa. I think starting in Iowa, both the Democrats and Republicans broke all-time records, and each succeeding primary state has done the same.
Matt? Yes. And did you notice a lot of people at the polls when you were personally there?
No, my polling station is always quiet. I'm never sure what the total turnout is, but I did ask them this time. I mean, there was a couple people in front of me, but, at about 7 o'clock, it was as quiet as you could hope for, really. So I think that's just my area. But still better numbers than they've ever had. I'm just happy for the local turnout, basically.
Matt, thanks very much for the call, and good night to you. Joining us now is Dan Schnur. He's a Republican strategist, national communications director for John McCain's 2000 presidential campaign, with us on the line from California. And it's nice to speak with you again.
Oh, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
And is the McCain camp, do you think, happy tonight that it looks like this Democratic contest is this Donnybrook is going to continue?
Boy, I think if they were to max out on happiness, they would have preferred maybe a 7.5% margin just to make this all a little bit even more cloudy than it is. But a 10-point margin will do for the McCain folks because it makes it pretty clear that this nomination is not going to be settled anytime in the immediate future. And that allows McCain to continue to ramp up organizationally, to continue to push for the political center unimpeded, and generally watch Obama and Clinton drive each other's unfavorables right up to the roof. So on balance, very good night for Hillary Clinton, almost as good a night for John McCain.
Yet, as we saw in the latest fundraising numbers, Senator Obama outraised Hillary Clinton 2-1, and, well, she outraised Senator McCain.
Now, and as you've seen, Senator McCain has already decided or is on the verge of deciding to take public matching funds for his campaign. So he's going to be at a financial disadvantage regardless. But one of the things he'll get to do over this time period while the Democrats are fighting it out in Indiana and North Carolina and in points forward is begin raising money for the Republican National Committee. He'll never have as much money on hand as either Obama or Clinton, but he can use this spring period to close that gap a little bit. And once again, I think the greatest advantage for him here is it allows Senator McCain to continue to stake out the political center uncontested until the Democratic nominee eventually does emerge.
Has he also taken the opportunity to begin to build bridges to the Republican right, the conservatives, the base of the Republican Party, people who were not necessarily happy or thrilled with his evident nomination?
He has been able to do that. Recent polling suggests that his support among conservatives is fairly similar to what Governor Bush enjoyed at this point in the 2000 cycle. And happily for him, a much greater level of support than either Senator Dole or President Bush enjoyed at similar times in the 1990s. I should say, however, that there is one dark lining on this silver cloud for John McCain, and that is that as we watch from the Republican side of the aisle, as we watch the Democrats compete, they're becoming better. They're becoming better candidates. Senator Obama is certainly a much more experienced and a battle-tested candidate than he was 3 months ago. And Senator Clinton is much more sure-footed and becoming much more comfortable displaying a side of her own personality and established an emotional connection with the voters as well. On balance, once again, I think this prolonged Democratic fight is a good thing for McCain. But there is no question that the one downside for him is that he is going to face a much better prepared and better tested opponent in a general election as a result of this ongoing contest.
Yeah, I mean, Dan, clearly the good news for the Republicans is that the Democrats keep beating each other up. The bad news is that nobody at all is talking about John McCain at all anymore, except for the fact that he confuses Shiites with Sunnis in Iraq. Once upon a time, the Republican word was that they would rather run against Hillary Clinton. But given the Jeremiah Wright stuff, the Bill Ayer stuff, the stuff that the Stephanopoulos and Charlie Gibson tried to bring up in the last debate, is there such a thing as a candidate that the Republicans would love to run against?
Well, I'm somewhat in the minority in my party here in that I've believed for some months now that Senator Clinton would be a more formidable opponent to McCain than Senator Obama. But no question, as you know, these incidents, as you know, undiscovered information from Senator Obama's biography continues to become public, it does look like the fight for the white working class voters who tend to decide presidential campaigns. In that fight, Senator McCain may have a even more significant advantage against Obama. Clinton is winning these voters, and these are the voters she needs to win a general election, whether it's in Pennsylvania or in Ohio and other swing states. The other potential advantage that McCain has against Obama, believe it or not, is actually emerging in the Jewish community. I am one of, as near as what I've been able to tell historically, one of the 22 Jewish Republicans in this country, and I'm exaggerating, of course. But Senator Obama, because of his association with Reverend Wright and because of some either misunderstood or controversial comments that he has made about the Palestinian people, depending on your point of view, has in the minds of the McCain campaign made Florida a more likely Republican state, made Pennsylvania a battleground state, and made even potentially New Jersey a battleground state, all as a result of the large Jewish populations in each of those states.
Dan Schnur, thanks very much for being with us tonight.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate
it. Dan Schnur, a Republican strategist who was National Communications Director for John McCain in his 2000 presidential bid. Joining us now is Bill Carrick, a Democratic strategist with us on the line from California. And good evening to you.
Hi there. How are you doing?
And it looks as if Hillary Clinton's 10-point lead continues to hold with 93% of the vote counted. What does that mean?
Well, it obviously means this nomination contest is going to go forward, and I think Senator Clinton is going to, contest vigorously the remaining primaries. I don't think there's any way that this is going to end before June 3rd. May 6th is going to be the next battleground. Fortunately, instead of being 6 weeks between primaries, it'll only be two. But North Carolina and Indiana are next up on the calendar.
And I know that you were listening as Dan Schnur was speaking to us, and he saw, well, not a quite an unalloyed victory tonight, but necessarily a victory for John McCain as the Democrats continue to beat up on each other.
Well, I think that obviously that's the conventional wisdom among a lot of people, that John McCain is out there trying to burnish his image and do things somewhat unconventionally, you know, making appearances in places like Selma, Alabama, which are not on the usual Republican campaign trail. And he's looking at this warfare between the Democrats and saying, you know, the longer it goes on, the better it is for his campaign. Now, I think obviously it does end, and obviously we're going to have a Democratic nominee, and we'll have a convention, and the Republicans will have a convention, and then we'll get the fall campaign will start after that. I think oftentimes what we see in the summer between the nomination process and the convention, we see a lot of, you know, numbers that don't hold up in the fall campaign.
It's a long way between now and then. And again, one of the numbers that has to be a little disturbing for Republicans is the simple volume of voters coming out in the Democratic primaries.
It is an amazing turnout, and it happens in contest after contest. And, you know, we're now going to go all the way to the end. So every state in the country is going to go through the campaign, and on all, you know, many states have had record turnouts that have, even when we had a competitive situation, the Republicans were having competitive primaries and the Democrats were having competitive primaries, Democrats were outvoting Republicans by sizable numbers. So that has got to be disconcerting for the Republicans as they look at the energy in the Democratic Party that's expressed itself in the primary turnout. If that holds up in the fall, that is certainly a very powerful dynamic for Democrats.
Let me play the voice of conventional wisdom just for a moment and say that the rest of the primaries go the way everybody more or less expects them to go, with each of the two candidates winning their share, and that at the June 3rd, after all of the voting is over, you still have Barack Obama ahead by a narrower margin, perhaps in the popular vote, but still ahead in the in the delegate count as well, but necessarily maybe a wounded candidate.
Well, I think, you know, I don't know, wounded sounds too severe, but I think he's going to be a tested candidate who has been through a very, very competitive primary contest, and I think Dan is right. I think he's gotten to be a better candidate, as has Senator Clinton, and they're going to be sharp at a period where Senator McCain has had a little R&R, and is probably not going to be as sharp a campaigner as they are at the end of this process. So there is some good news in the continuation of this contest. But I think we're probably going to see Senator Obama win a fair share of these remaining primaries. Certainly he's got advantages in Oregon and Montana and South Dakota and North Carolina. And we see a jump ball coming ahead in Indiana. And Senator Clinton has some advantages in Kentucky and West Virginia in particular. So, you know, we're going to see them just like we've seen all year. win trade-off winning primaries, basically based on the demographic composition of each of the states.
Bill, we've heard a lot of Democrats saying this has gone on too long, that they've been at each other's throats, they're getting nervous about this. But we also heard two voters in tonight's special, a woman from Oregon, a woman from Indiana, saying they are so excited they can't wait to vote. So ultimately, you don't think there's any long-range harm in this going on to June 3rd?
Well, I have to be totally honest here. If I had a magic wand, I would end it. Because I think that this gets to be kind of like a fourth overtime in a basketball game. You know, the players are exhausted. They're going to make mistakes. There's a lot of people in the Democratic Party would like to see this resolved and not continue and start preparing for the general election. So, in all honesty, Ken, I'm one of those ones that would like to see it over. Now, the people who are going to vote, who voted today in Pennsylvania and who are going to vote in the remaining primaries are awful, you know, they're very excited about this. And these campaigns, and this isn't two campaigns that are going to come into their states, you know, as we've seen often times in the past when they're out of money and there's no advertising, there's no organizational effort, there's no, you know, bumper stickers or campaign buttons. And these campaigns are going to come in full blast, so they're going to get the ultimate Iowa treatment from these candidates in the next 2 weeks in North Carolina and Indiana and in other places beyond that.
Bill Carrick, thanks very much for your time.
Alrighty.
Bill Carrick, a Democratic strategist with us on the line from California. Stay with us. We're going to hear excerpts from the speeches of Senator Obama and Senator Clinton earlier this evening. We'll be hearing also from you, 800-989-8255. I'm Neil Conan, and you're listening to an NPR Election News Special. This is an NPR Election News Special. I'm Neil Conan in Washington, along with NPR political editor Ken Rudin. Senator Hillary Rodham Clinton scored a crucial victory today in Pennsylvania. With 93% of the vote counted, she leads by 200,000 votes, a margin of 10%. She hoped to equal her margin in Ohio or do better. That margin was 10%. The campaign for the Democratic presidential nomination will go on. It goes on to North Carolina and to Indiana in 2 weeks' time. If you'd like to join the conversation, we'd be especially interested to hear from voters in North Carolina and Indiana about how the contest is going in those places and what they expect to happen in the next couple of weeks. And we're going to hear now excerpts from the speeches of both of the political candidates, where Senator Clinton spoke earlier today at the Park Hyatt Hotel in Philadelphia at the Clinton Election Night headquarters about how her victory in Pennsylvania was not just political, but personal as well.
The victory we share tonight is deeply personal. It was here in Pennsylvania where my grandfather started work as a boy in the lace mills and ended up as a supervisor 5 decades later. It was here where my father attended college and played football for Penn State. And I am back here tonight because of their hard work and sacrifice. And I only wish they could have lived to see this moment. Because in this election, I carry with me not just their dreams, but the dreams of people like them and like you all across our country. People who embrace hard work and opportunity, who never waver in the face of adversity, who stand for what you believe and never stop believing in the promise of America. I'm in this race to fight for you. To fight for everyone who's ever been counted out. For everyone fighting to pay the grocery bills or the medical bills, the credit card and mortgage payments, and the outrageous price of gas at the pump today. You know, the pundits questioned whether Pennsylvanians would trust me with this charge, and tonight you showed you do. You know you can count on me to stand up strong for you every single day in the White House.
Senator Clinton celebrating victory today in Pennsylvania. About an hour ago, Senator Barack Obama arrived in Evansville, Indiana, and spoke at Roberts Municipal Stadium in Evansville. He used his address, at least in part, to draw a sharp contrast between his campaign and that of the expected Republican nominee, Senator John McCain.
We can't afford to play the same Washington games with the same Washington players and expect a different result. Not this time. Not now. We already know what we're getting out of the other party's nominee. John McCain has offered this country a lifetime of service, and we respect that. But what he's not offering is any meaningful change from the policies of George W. Bush. John McCain believes that George Bush's Iraq policy is a success, so he's offering four more years of a war with no exit strategy. A war that's sending our troops on their third tour and their fourth tour and their fifth tour of duty. A war that's cost us billions of dollars and thousands of lives, thousands more grievously injured. A war that has not made us more safe, but has distracted us from the task at hand in Afghanistan, a war that should have never been authorized and should have never been waged. John McCain said that George Bush's economic policies have led to, and I quote, great progress over the last 7 years. And so he's promising four more years of tax cuts for CEOs and corporations who didn't need them and weren't asking for them. Tax cuts that he once voted against because he said they offended his conscience. Well, they may have stopped offending John McCain's conscience somewhere along the road to the White House, but George Bush's economic policies still offend my conscience, and they still offend yours.
Senator Obama also congratulated Senator Clinton on her hard-fought victory. For her part, Senator Clinton said the tide is turning in her favor. Let's go get some more callers on the line. Joining us now is Spencer. Spencer with us from Charlotte in North Carolina.
How you doing?
Good evening.
I think that you're missing a big portion of how this election in Pennsylvania is going. There were quite a number of Republicans who changed party affiliation in order to vote for Hillary.
These are the so-called Limbaugh voters.
Yes, to keep the fight going through the convention. And being in North Carolina and being an unaffiliated registration, I can vote for either party in the election at May 6th. And depending upon how the election in Pennsylvania goes, that will give me the impetus to vote for whatever will keep the fight going through the convention.
So you're a Republican making a tactical vote for whichever Democrat you think could use your vote.
Actually, I'm unaffiliated.
Aha, I see. All right.
Come
November, do you think you're going to vote for a Democrat or a Republican?
I will vote for who is going to give security to this country.
Well, Spencer, thanks very much for the call. Appreciate it. Ken Rudin, do you think this has been a factor at all? Rush Limbaugh, the famous AM broadcaster, has been calling on people to cross over and vote for Hillary Rodham Clinton to extend this contest for some time now.
Well, we always talk about these crossover voters who have these Machiavellian interests at heart. I suspect it's not as big as some people think. Of course, for Republicans to do that, that means they also can't vote in the many congressional primaries that also happened in Pennsylvania today. And we also know that many independents switched to the Democratic primary roles by the deadline because otherwise they couldn't vote for Barack Obama. So I think both perhaps Republicans and Obama supporters switched so they can vote for their own candidates. But ultimately, I think there are fewer Republicans voting in Democratic primaries than people think.
Let's go now to Carvin. Carvin with us from Bucks County in Pennsylvania.
Yes, I'm calling because I would like to know, is there a way from a Democratic point of view to determine those, like you mentioned earlier, the Rush Limbaugh Republicans, how many of those who voted for Hillary, Senator Clinton today, would actually pull that lever for her in November? Or if Senator Obama gets that Democratic nomination, would actually pull for him? Or is there an underlining racism that says, I can't vote for a gender candidate, or I can't vote for someone who doesn't look like me?
That's a big question the Democrats have been trying to answer all campaign long, Ken Rudin.
Right, and we've talked about it a little earlier that some polls have shown that up to 30% of Hillary Clinton supporters said that if she is not the nominee, they could easily vote for John McCain in November. A smaller amount among Obama supporters, perhaps anywhere between 15 and 20, could either stay home or vote for McCain. But then again, we have yet to see a poll about how many Republicans are suddenly attracted by, or at least disaffected by, the last 8 years of George W. Bush, and which switch over to the Democratic primary, to the Democratic nominee. I think once we know who the Democratic nominee will be, it will be very interesting to see how the polls reflect that change.
Carvin, thanks.
Well, one thing I would like to hope that NPR keeps with this good type of reporting, and then maybe in November, after the national election takes place, that we could revisit this to see how many people switch back to their ingrained thoughts or actual voting with real facts and with passion.
I think no matter what happens, people are going to be poring over what happened in November for quite some time. But Carvin, thanks very much for the call.
You're welcome. Take care. Have a great night.
And you too. Let's go to Greg. Greg is calling us from Chester in Pennsylvania.
Good evening.
Good evening.
I worked at the polls in Chester today where we had a fantastic turnout. We also had to disappoint a number of voters who wanted to vote for Barack Obama but couldn't because they were registered independent and even Republican. I think we have to remember that the November election isn't a closed primary, and the results today can seriously underestimate Obama's support, given how well he does among independents, and I was surprised to see registered Republicans.
Chester, of course, in that southeastern corner of Pennsylvania, which was the base for Barack Obama. And Ken Rudin, yes, Hillary Clinton has done considerably better in closed primaries where only Democrats can vote.
That's exactly right. And we saw that in Ohio and in New Jersey and, of course, in Pennsylvania. And that's why the Barack Obama people for the longest time furiously tried to get all these independents leaning towards Obama to switch to the Democratic primary so they could vote for Obama on Tuesday.
I would add, if I may, that it's actually quite difficult to switch parties. There's a 30-day requirement in Pennsylvania. So I would suggest, unlike the gentleman two callers ago did, that it's actually quite hard to sabotage in a way or vote an opposite party in this particular instance.
Good point, Greg. Thanks very much for your call.
Thank you.
And let's get Sarah on the line. Sarah's calling us from Philadelphia.
Hi, how are you?
Very well, thank you.
I've been working in Pennsylvania helping Hillary Clinton campaign since Sunday, and I'm from Massachusetts, and the people that I was, came down with were sort of assigned to Bucks County, a little northeast, I think, of Philadelphia, and I've worked in a few different states, New Hampshire, Maine, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, made phone calls all over the country. And one thing that was just really remarkable and surprising to me was I did a lot of canvassing Sunday, Monday, and today. And I've never been in a place where they loved Hillary so much. I mean, teenage boys were coming up to me and saying it would be really great to have a woman president, men, women, different ages. It was mostly white working class neighbor areas, I guess, where I was. I mean, when I was at the poll today, there were people of all, races and ethnicities and whatever coming. But that was really surprising. And I just even noticed that on the radio, on the talk radio shows, they seem to be, a lot more willing to talk positively about Hillary, which I don't really hear up in the New England area where I live. I was at, for example, my unofficial survey. When I was canvassing yesterday, I left a lot of literature around, but I spoke to about 40 different individuals, and 36 of them were for Hillary, and 4 of them were for Obama. So that was sort of what the ratio was.
Well, thanks very much, Sarah. Appreciate the call.
Thank you.
Good night. Joining us now is Congressman Jason Altmaier, a Democrat who represents the 4th District of Pennsylvania and undecided superdelegate from Pennsylvania, with us by phone from his office here in Washington, D.C. Might be his home in Washington, D.C. I'm not quite sure. Congressman, nice of you to stay up and talk with us.
Happy to be here.
And, Hillary Clinton has scored apparently a 10-point victory in Pennsylvania this evening. Do you think that may have decided your vote?
Well, it's very important to me who wins the state of Pennsylvania and certainly who wins my district, and Senator Clinton won even more decisively in my congressional district. But in the end, this is a national election, and I think the most important thing that superdelegates can do is make sure that the will of the people across the country is upheld, and I'm not going to make an endorsement until after all the states have participated on June 3rd. And at that point, I'm going to look at the playing field and see if Senator Obama has won both the popular vote and the delegate count. It's going to be very difficult to convince me that I should overturn the will of the people at that point.
People might say that you might want to vote for the candidate you think might best win the election come November.
Well, the way I look at it is think of what we in America would think if another country had a six-month election process and the votes were counted and one of the candidates won and was elected by the popular vote, and a group of party elites came in and said, well, no, we don't like this outcome. We're going to go with a different candidate. I just think we would be outraged, and it's not to say that that is definitely off the table, but it certainly is a very difficult case to make that after 6 months that the people have made a bad decision and the group of party elders who know better are going to go the other way.
But as you look at the results from Pennsylvania this evening, you'd have to say that Senator Clinton's chances of the nomination are definitely improved.
There's no question. This is the equivalent of a football game in the fourth quarter and being down by 14 points and kicking a field goal. You've improved your chances a little bit, but you still have a tall mountain to climb. And I think Senator Clinton, with her decisive win today, has taken a step in getting herself back into contention, but it's still an uphill fight.
But you're saying still down 11 points in the fourth quarter and probably not going to catch up on the delegate count, probably not going to count, even though she's up more than 200,000 votes today in Pennsylvania, not going to catch up in the popular vote either.
Well, the popular vote is her only chance to catch up, and if she does, and it's possible, then certainly that changes the calculation. And that's why I want to give her the opportunity to complete this race all the way through June 3rd, and then we'll see where things stand, and I'll make my decision.
Congressman, you also represent a district that is probably, fair to say, John McCain country, or at least perhaps looking that way for November. Is that part of your decision to hold back on a decision? And also, you talk about party elites and how people might think of the superdelegates of overturning the will of the people. Would you suggest that the party do away with superdelegates for 2012?
Yes, I would. I don't think that superdelegates should exist. I regret the fact that we're going to play this role. Unfortunately, we're going to have to, because no one will have gotten the number of delegates needed to clinch the nomination. But I do think that it should be the will of the people that should matter and not a group of party insiders.
Let's see. Ken's other question, your district voted for President Bush last time around, and is this McCain country?
President Bush won my district twice. He won by 9 points in 2004, so certainly I would expect Senator McCain to run strong. My district generally favors people that are moderates and centrists, and I think Senator McCain can be viewed that way. That's not to say that neither of these Democratic candidates could win the district. I think they could, but it's certainly going to be a battle.
Congressman Altmaier, thanks very much for your time this evening.
Thank you. Happy to do it.
Appreciate it. Jason Altmaier, a Democrat who represents the 4th District of Pennsylvania and undecided superdelegate. And as you heard him say, despite Senator Clinton's decisive victory today in Pennsylvania and in his district, he remains undecided and will make his decision later on the basis of who won the popular vote and who leads in the delegate count after all the voting is over come June. And Ken Rudin, that makes this next two-week period the elections and the primary contests in North Carolina and Indiana critical.
Exactly. And don't be surprised that other superdelegates are looking at the same kind of calculation, not only the fear of overturning the so-called will of the people, but also who would help them best run in November, because Congressman Altmaier, like many superdelegates, will be on the ballot in November, and they have to calculate whether Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama would be a stronger candidate to help boost their chances for re-election.
We're going to end with this email we got from Margaret in Williamsport, Pennsylvania, who writes, "What I've appreciated today is the engagement I've seen in my fellow citizens, especially in students. I teach at Bucknell University and heard students talking politics animatedly with each other throughout the entire day. One student who was voting for the first time said he was so excited that he got up early because he wanted to be there right when the polls opened. He talked about how awesome it is that our primary turned out to be important, and he said he hoped both candidates stayed in it to the end so that citizens in the remaining states could feel the energy." Well, a lot of energy among Democrats in Pennsylvania today. Ken Rudin, thanks very much for being with us today.
Thanks, Neil.
NPR political editor Ken Rudin, who writes the Political Junkie column, and you can read that at npr.org. Join us at 2 o'clock Eastern Time tomorrow afternoon for another analysis as we get the final results in from Pennsylvania and look ahead to the contests in Indiana and North Carolina. That's 2 p.m. tomorrow, live from the Newseum here in Washington, D.C. And at the last count, 95% of the vote counted. Hillary Clinton continues to lead Senator Barack Obama by 10 points in the polls. I'm Neil Conan in Washington, D.C., and you've been listening to an NPR election news special. Thank you for listening, and good night from Washington.